9.
From WAMU 88.5 at American University in Washington, welcome to the Politics Hour starring Tom Sherwood. I'm Kojo Nandi. Tom Sherwood, he's our resident analyst. He's a reporter for NBC4 and a columnist with the Current Newspapers, who, it is my understanding, broke this story this morning that Walmart is not only planning to shutter 269 stores this year, over 100 of which, of course, are in the United States, but it has also announced that it will no longer be opening two stores in Washington, D.C., the stores that were going to be planned for the Skyland Town Center in Southeast Washington and the other at Capitol Gateway Marketplace in Northeast Washington. Tom Sherwood, what does this all mean?
It means that the city is left holding the bag by this major corporation that pledged to open six stores. And when Mayor Vincent Gray was mayor, he told Walmart at the Las Vegas shopping center convention, he said, you can come to the district, but we want you to put a store in Skyland. Skyland is up off of Good Hope Road and Alabama Avenue. It was an old 50-style shopping center that was virtually dead. It's a nice new Safeway across the street. But it desperately needs jobs, and it needs proper retail in that neighborhood. And it's been more than a decade in the works. And for Walmart to announce under this cover of a massive worldwide reorganization of its stores is just kind of sickening in some respects for so many people in the city. I know city officials are furious because for the last several years they announced a groundbreaking 2 years ago. Am I going on and ranting about this?
Yeah, keep on.
But, you know, and they said, and I'm just trying to calm my voice down, because I do feel personally I've done so many stories about the development of clearing the land and getting it ready and talking to Mayor Gray about, Mayor Gray, if you leave office, they're not going to build that store. You were the person who pushed it. So, oh, no, they're going to do it. It's going to be a good thing. Well, they're now not going to do it. And the Gateway Project out of East Capitol, which is almost to Prince George's, there are new houses out there. There's new development. The city has announced new development out there. A lot of it contingent on the fact that there would be retail in one of the poor retail deserts of this city. And for Walmart, and it says it's doing a worldwide restructuring. It's going to close stores. It's going to not open some, and it's going to open stores in places. For them, I'm anxious to hear more about what Walmart told the city officials in the meeting this morning. It doesn't sound good.
Joining us in studio is Isaiah Leggett. Ike Leggett is the county executive of Montgomery County, Maryland. Ike Leggett, thank you so much for joining
us. Thank you for having me. Let me say Happy New Year to Tom.
You've heard that story, yeah? When a jurisdiction reaches an agreement with a major corporation to do something like this, how binding are those agreements really?
Well, it depends on the agreement, but I have a saying when I go to a groundbreaking ceremony. I say I like coming to groundbreaking ceremonies, but I really love ribbon cutting ceremonies because there's a difference. I've seen an awful lot of groundbreaking ceremonies never translate to a ribbon cutting ceremony, and essentially this is what we've had here.
I did talk to city officials this morning before I came here, and they were telling me that in the agreement, there is the out for Walmart. If there weren't, Walmart would, of course, be held to a different standard. So they are legally may be on good footing, but it's a terrible blow to the people of the city.
Well, the challenge generally is when you have a large corporation or an entity that is the anchor, because it's not just that one individual corporation or store. All the other dependent development in some way relies upon that, and that becomes a real downfall for the other developers in the area.
That's the voice of Montgomery County Executive Ike Leggett. If you have questions or comments for him, you can go to our website, kojoshow.org, watch the live video stream of this broadcast, ask a question or make a comment. You can call at 800-433-8850 or send email to kojo@wamu.org. Before we focus on Montgomery County, Tom Sherwood, I want to talk about a place where you used to work at one point, in the Virginia General Assembly, where the majority Republicans in the Virginia State Senate have decided to kick news reporters off the Senate floor. They are are now restricted to the gallery, where I guess in either a show of practicality or by way of simply indicating how bad this was, somebody took opera glasses up there and I guess binoculars, because that's how far away they are from the Senate floor. Why?
Well, you know, long ago in a different world, I covered the Virginia General Assembly, living in Richmond, Virginia in the early 80s for the Washington Post. And one of the great things about the old legislature there is you could walk around, you could stand there, stand off to the sidelines where the members come and go. During breaks, you could walk out on the floor even and talk to people at their desk. It allowed the reporters to get a real-time understanding of what was happening. You could see and you could even hear members talking on the floor about what legislation was before the bodies. So to push you up into the gallery, into the peanut gallery, where people can just watch, clearly is not a – I don't understand the move, because if you want your story told, it seems to me you're
not. How about if you don't want your story
told?
Even
conservative Republicans do want coverage in the media. They want coverage. They just want different coverage. But you don't get better coverage, I think, by banishing people to the sidelines.
Well, obviously, there is some dissatisfaction with how they have been covered. And obviously, those members of the media who have now been restricted to the gallery will also be highly dissatisfied themselves. So I don't know how they expect to get improved coverage as a result of that.
Maybe when you do some other story, maybe a day we can get Alan Suderman, who used to be Loose Lips, you know, here is covering the Virginia legislature for the Associated Press, and got him. He tweeted out a couple of things about it. He might have a few choice words.
Okay. On to the business at hand. First, how are you doing?
I'm doing very well. Thank you.
You had back surgery in November. You feel better now?
I certainly do. Thank you.
And, you know, he was very good yesterday at the Washingtonian of the Year Awards, where he was awarded.
I saw that. Congratulations, yes.
He was very good. He spoke within the time allotted.
Well, Tom did an excellent job of making sure that we moved the program along. We started on time, and we ended on time, and he did an excellent job.
Enough of this mutual backslapping. Montgomery County is in the news recently as deportation raids by Immigration and Customs Enforcement agents are happening in several states. You have said that Montgomery County law enforcement will not participate first. What are the grounds on which the county can refuse to participate in these federal actions?
Well, first of all, let me say that we have in Montgomery County a population that's well over 1 million residents, and 18% of our residents emanate from Latin America. And we pride ourselves in the diversity that we have and welcoming people into Montgomery County. And we are somewhat disturbed about the federal attempts to expand the deportations of residents of Montgomery County and around the nation. So my attempt was to do two things. One, to let the federal government know and to join the voices of others throughout the nation to say we disapprove and we do not like the policy, which we do not have the control of, but it's a federal matter. More importantly, but to say to our local residents who are really in fear, not sending their kids to schools, not participating in the daily activities throughout the county, not working with our local police to say, hey, we're not part of the federal government. We want you to go about your daily activities, and we disapprove what the federal government is doing. Certainly, we do not have the authority to, in effect, make the federal government do what it wishes to do, but we're encouraging them, and we're working with other jurisdictions to hope that the president and ICE officials will look differently on this approach. They have now started to look at different approaches, by the way. That is to look in country to make sure that they can do much of this in the native countries rather than to allow people to actually make that very difficult transition trying to get to America. But we certainly do not believe this policy is the right one.
So you wrote the letter. Did all the county officials sign it?
Yes, the unanimous.
I think you said to send a message that you were going to continue the policy that where the police department is not going to ask immigration questions. Now, what's different about that, I think the Post wrote a story about it and others did too, is that in Prince William County in Virginia, where Corey Stewart is the chairman of the board there, and I might add the statewide coordinator for
Donald
the Trump campaign, he said if Montgomery, this is a quote from him, which I think Channel 9 had first, if Montgomery County wants illegal aliens who are committing crimes, we'll be happy to encourage them to move there.
Well, I would not expect anything less from Mr. Stewart, but I do not believe that this is something that we would be doing in Montgomery County. He speaks for those in Prince William County. I speak for Montgomery County. We do not believe that's an appropriate way in which to characterize people who are in this country, people who are trying to work, people who are trying to ensure that they provide for their families, and people who we believe if you go through the appropriate process, we can probably figure all of this out. There is a national debate, and we do need to get a hold of our national immigration policy, and we do need to do some things along the border. But once people are here, we need to treat them humanely, and we're going to do that with respect and honor in Montgomery County.
He contends that his several years ago when he had this crackdown about immigrants, that crime is down, that people are more, he says of all nationalities, races, are more respectful of each other who's there because they feel like more of a community because they don't have people who are there illegally.
Well,
undocumented.
Well, I can't speak to what happens in Prince William County. I can only speak what happens in Montgomery County. And we do not appreciate and do not think that someone would be dictating to us what we should be doing in Montgomery County.
Do you still call it sanctuary cities and counties? I haven't heard that lately.
Well, we're not quite a sanctuary city. There's a big difference between what we do in Montgomery County. We do, in effect, try to work with the federal authorities for people involved in serious crimes. We just are not engaged in the day-to-day activities of deportation along the lines which the federal government has implemented.
Are you disappointed that the Obama administration is moving forward with these deportations?
I am. And given the recent history of the administration, that the president has done a great deal in his executive authority to try to make sure that we make a proper transition for the people who are here at this point in time to make this type of an effort without trying some of the other things that they're now looking at in-country sort of centers that they can evaluate this, I think was a mistake on his part. But overall, I think that he has tried to deal with this issue in a very humane way, and I think he's made some progress. I'm just disappointed that they made this effort at this point.
800-433-8850 if you have questions or comments for Ike Leggett. The Purple Line. The state received four bids for building the light rail line last year and is slated to pick the winning bid, I think, today. Do you know the status?
I don't know as of yet. We'll get a word hopefully later on today or tomorrow. It seems that we're moving forward. I want to congratulate the governor on his move to make sure that we move forward. He's placed this on the top of his agenda and agreed with us locally. But more importantly, it's Senator Murkowski, who has been just such a steward in helping Montgomery County and the state of Maryland and many others on transit dollars and many others. I refer to her as the rainmaker because she has done so much, and she is really going out of a bang in terms of the things she's doing for the state of Maryland and for our nation.
You were in Annapolis this week with her and Senator Cardin and lots of folks, and there were Sharon Baker and others. Is the financing on this Purple Line, it just bugs me that the governor announced he would let the Purple Line go forward and then took over $500 million out of the state's funding for it. Is the funding in place when you get this? When you pick someone to build it, will the funding be in place? I think there's.
Well, the only portion of the funding that still
the federal
is to be the federal portion of it.
How much is that?
That will be about $900 million.
$900 million, which you'll have to get from a Republican Congress.
That's right.
But
the state and the local, and Murkowski has put in a portion of that to start with, but we still need a ways to go.
And of course, she'll be out of office as of at the end of this year, right?
Right. But so. my hope and expectation is that the project is moving forward with the planning. We've got the initial funding from the federal government, the state and local governments aboard. That I hope that they not reverse this at this point in time.
Since this is the politics hour, Congressman Van Hollen from Montgomery County is running for the Senate against Donna Edwards. Have either of them, both of them, are members of Congress? Are they working in any way to help get federal funding?
I think they both are. They're both are working on behalf of the state of Maryland, both working to make sure we get the transportation dollars that we need. Van Hollen has been, as you know, most of it is in Montgomery County, so he's probably been much more forceful and aggressive in doing it. But I say both of them have been working on behalf of the state for transportation dollars.
I just don't want you to end up with a skyline situation where it doesn't get done.
Well, yeah. Speaking of politics, unlike some other Democrats in Maryland, you've made an effort to work with Governor Hogan, especially on this Purple Line, a project which he initially opposed. How did you persuade him to support it?
Well, we had a meeting of the mind between himself, Sharon Baker, and others. I think we made a very positive case not to look at it in a sort of a way that many others have looked at it. We believe that it was a project that he wanted to approve. He just needed support from the local communities, and we provided that. And I've worked with him on this project, and I believe that he is sincere about helping us, and we're going to work to make sure this happens. So I congratulate him and congratulate his Department of Transportation, Pete Rahm, and all the people that have helped Montgomery County and Prince George's County. This is an important project, and I think he recognizes for him to achieve the objectives that he wants, and this is a gift that we made to him, need to make sure that we get the jobs in the local area, and transit is important to
them. Is it being done at the expense of the Red Line, I think, in Baltimore, where he didn't go forward, and I think the state's being sued now for...
It's difficult to fund both of those projects.
And losers?
I don't look at it this way, and I think that they're looking at some ways in which to accommodate some of the concerns and challenges in that area. You have to keep in mind that the Purple Line was much further along. We had some dedicated funding already available, and if you had to pick and choose between the projects, unfortunately, this project, I think, was probably on the merits of a stronger project. But I cannot speak to his decision as to how he would go about making a decision.
And one of the, I think, somewhat funny aspects of this is people who have built on, who have property abutting the Purple Line route, and they have built onto it with sheds and all different kinds of things.
They've told they got until April 30th.
It's April 30th, right?
Yeah. Make way.
What are you going to do?
Get out of
there
way.
With a tractor and knock them off? I'd love to see you on a tractor knocking them down.
No. We hope that there will be voluntary compliance and working with the county and the state to make sure that we remove all of those things that are in the right of way. We have the ability from a legal standpoint of view in terms of eminent domain to take further legal action. I hope it does not come to that. It would only mean that it's a little bit more costly and time-consuming to do it, but we're hoping for voluntary compliance.
What about the Capitol Crescent Trail and the Silver Spring Green Trail? What are the plans when and if the Purple Line moves forward?
Well, all of those will be in place, and so they are not in jeopardy as a result of the Purple Line. There have been some questions about the accommodation, but we will accommodate both of those in our ongoing efforts to make sure that we preserve it. It is important for us to keep both, and I think the plans that we have in place now will actually do that, Coach.
We may be assuming too much here, but why don't you just very quickly say where the Purple Line will go from what point to what point, and what it means in terms of cross-county job development?
Well, if you start from, if you look today, the transportation routes in and out of Washington were basically north-south. And if you look at the Red Line, for example, they are not connected, i.e., Bethesda, Silver Spring. And this is where the original concept of the Purple Line started, Bethesda, Silver Spring. It has been extended all the way over to New Carrollton, so that it would go through the University of Maryland all the way through Langdon Park to New Carrollton. So it would connect that east-west link, thereby connecting both ends of the Purple Line, the Red Line. It will connect Jobs, University of Maryland, and enhance our corridors that would allow us to better enhance 270, the biotechnology corridors as well. It's a project that I think is long overdue. We believe that it will enhance development, it will enhance the quality of life, and reduce much of the traffic in that corridor.
This Purple Line will be run by Metro, is that right? It is part of Metro?
No, it's not part of Metro.
Total separate.
That's
okay.
Right. Yeah.
Who's going to run it?
It will be run by the state of Maryland, Montgomery County.
Once they don't mess with those trails, my bicycle told me this morning, tell him if they mess with the trails, I'll be PO'd. So
yeah. I agree.
Now you know.
And we're not going to mess with the trails. We're going to preserve the trails.
Here now is Dick in Chevy Chase, Maryland. Dick, you're on the air. Go ahead, please.
Thank you very much. I'm a big fan of your program. I want to ask about the PepsiCo-Exelon merger. The district renegotiated that merger and got a lot of extra benefits for its residents. For example, under the settlement, the revised settlement, there's $25.6 million provided to offset rate increases. There's another $14 for one-time direct bill credit to the customers, which is supposed to be about $50 per residential customer.
Would you like to know why Mr. Leggett was not a tougher negotiator for Montgomery County? Is that
well? I want to know: do we have equal benefits, and if not, can we renegotiate now to get equal benefits, or have we missed out on this?
No, we have not missed out on it because all of the benefits that you see now that are being negotiated will apply to all of the other jurisdictions as well. The district was able to exact some additional concessions over and above what we got, which I think was pretty significant to begin with. They're the last in line, and they're the ones who are sitting at the real challenger point for which Exelon and PepsiCo are trying to merge, and therefore they're in a far, far better negotiating position. But everything that they negotiated will be applicable to the other jurisdictions as well.
One of
Go ahead.
One of the people who's opposed to this Pepco-Exelon merger not only complains about the incessant radio ads on some other stations about it, but says the improvements that Mayor Bowser negotiated, somewhere like $75 million worth of various things for a few years, basically putting flowers on a casket, that it's a bad deal, that Exelon has not shown that it will be able to run Pepco any better, and that Pepco will simply become a cash cow for Exelon. What is the argument that getting this Chicago-based mega dealer to run Pepco will make things better for this region where Pepco serves now?
Well, if you take a chance and look at where we are today, we have Pepco, in my opinion, that is not able to provide the level of services that the residents throughout the region want. Their ability to do so financially is strained. It will cost them a great deal of money, add into the ratepayers, and to do that, you not get the kind of reliability that you want. They need to have someone else involved in this process, someone else with a greater financial stake in this, able to, in effect, help us to achieve the goals that we want. You simply will not get there with the existing operation that we have, and people need to recognize that. People are dissatisfied with the services we receive. People are not clear about the reliability and not clear that they can obtain objectives, meet the objectives they've outlined on an existing system. We need greater reliability, and you can get that by an additional inclusion of someone is much larger with the capacity to, in fact, deliver on the promises that Pepco's already made. You can't get there with the existing organizational structure.
What happens if Betty Ann Kane, the chairman of the Public Service Commission, persuades or any of the three members vote to disallow this merger? Then they would have to go to court to pursue it, I would guess.
I'm not sure, but I think that probably kill the deal, and we would end up with where we are today. And
it if would people kill the are deal satisfied, for other jurisdictions?
That's right.
It's all or none.
And if we end up with where we are today, then I hope that the people who understand what is at stake, we will continue to fight through the challenges of reliability and the difficult financial structure which Pepco's in today, which is not good for the residents and the people who rely upon those services now.
Our guest is Ike Leggett. He is the county executive of Montgomery County, Maryland. You can ask him a question or make a comment to him by calling 800-433-8850. Watch our live video stream at the website kojoshow.org or send email to kojo@wamu.org. Shoot us a tweet at @kojoshow. Let's talk drinking. Montgomery County controls alcohol distribution, but a referendum could change that. This is a revenue issue for the county, and you were already preparing voters for the possibility of tax hikes. What are the issues as you see it? And
well,
if the voters
Kojo,
want
it took
this,
you 24, 25 minutes to get to that.
Yeah, well,
so I know you
won't
get it one way. Well, let's look at it. You know, I'm not opposed to privatization. I've just privatized our economic development corporation efforts. I've privatized the workforce development. I've tried to privatize transit operations. So I'm personally not opposed to privatization. But this is ridiculous. Under the scheme that has been suggested, the county will lose somewhere around $30, $35 million annually. In exchange, in 6 years from now, getting about $800,000. Now, to assume that you can simply push that aside, I think is irresponsible. This is a huge impact on a budget, even a budget of $5 billion. Once you take into consideration all the legal obligations the county will have to make, it will have a tremendous impact. It will jeopardize our AAA bond rating, and more importantly, to get that in terms of taxes, it will be about $100 per each household, in average household in Montgomery County. There's no ifs, ands, and buts about this. We are working to resolve any of the lingering questions as it relates to questions that some of the local industry may have in terms of services. But this is an irresponsible development, and I hope that we reject this. I'm fighting very hard to make sure we do so. It will hurt our AAA bond rating and will increase taxes in Montgomery County.
Who would benefit if you went to a privatized alcohol sales system?
Most importantly, the liquor.
We're talking about hard liquor now, with beer and wine
distributors
sold in,
and the wholesalers would distribute. You simply shift $35 million into their hands, and there's no evidence, given what we've seen in other jurisdictions, that you would have a greater degree of reliability than you see today. It's just irresponsible, especially when you're taking into consideration that the county is suffering from the Wynn case that is costing us a huge amount of money. There continue to be challenges with the movement of the economy overall. This is just a bad move. And when you listen to people who are making these assumptions, just ask them carefully, how are you going to substitute for the $30 to $35 million? What is the impact on services, programs, and taxes in Montgomery County? They have no answer
for
that.
The state controller, Peter French, though, I think, has supported privatization, hasn't he?
And they're disappointed with Peter on that, because he did so without ever consulting with us locally. He's done so without looking carefully at the results of what would happen here. And I think that he needs to go back and look at it. His own analysis, what I just described to you, his own analysis suggested we get about $800,000 6 years from now.
He said this I'm looking at his analysis, 1,300 jobs, create $50 million in new wages in the county.
Well, if you believe that, I've got some land I want to sell you in the Nate Ward of Louisiana.
What do you say?
That's not going
to
happen.
What do you say to people who are dissatisfied with the current system?
Well, when you look at the overall dissatisfaction, the numbers, I think they've exaggerated that to begin with. And there are some levels of dissatisfaction. We've worked, and we are working, to come up with a plan to address that. But the industry has said, no, we don't want the adjustments. We want the entire thing. And that's what has happened.
On to the telephones again. Here now is David in Potomac, Maryland. David, you're on the air. Go ahead, please.
Thank you. This question is a follow-on to the discussion about the possible merger. And my question is, there are some about a dozen or more utility companies who don't generate any electricity, but they rebill the electricity that they buy from Pepco at a lower rate. And my question is why are we putting up with this? If Pepco can afford to rebate money to these small resellers, why can't they just Pepco just lower the rates for everybody and get these little utility companies out of the picture?
Good luck with that.
I would hope that you look at the financial structure of Pepco and carefully look at it. This is not one for which you can have a great deal of rate reductions. In fact, you're going to have rate increases. There is a question about Pepco meeting the reliability standards that we've set for them. It is difficult for me to see how they could do that without significant increase of significant inclusion of additional cash. There is no room for error there, in my opinion, for them to do all of that. And I think that's the portion that people fail to understand here. It's questionable whether or not they can deliver on what they've already outlined, given the fact that they are, I think, really strapped in terms of revenues to start with.
Here now is Sarah in Silver Spring, Maryland. Sarah, your turn.
Hi, how are you? Thanks for having me on. I'm actually a resident of Burtonsville, along with the county executive, and I was wondering what the update was on the Burtonsville Shopping Center.
Well, first of all, we finally got a concession with Giant that they are going to relinquish the lease that they have there. There's been a stumbling block. We have several proposals that we're evaluating now to come up with the best mixed use for the old shopping center. And hopefully we'll be announcing something in the foreseeable future. But the biggest stumbling block right now is out of the way. That is that the Giant Corporation has decided to relinquish that lease and allow us to go forward with the developer to make sure that we have something that I think the residents of the Burtonsville area would be proud of.
And here now, Bruce in Bethesda, Maryland. Bruce, your turn.
Thanks. I have some questions about what the
county... No, make it one question, please.
One question about the county's affordable housing strategy and why haven't we used... I'm a resident of Bethesda, for example, the large parking lot at Leland Street behind Wisconsin Avenue, and taken a proactive position like the district has by putting these sites out for competitive bid and for heavy mixed-use projects that have a large affordable housing component, which we're terribly missing in our county, and particularly in the Bethesda area.
Well, keep in mind that we've put in somewhere in the neighborhood of close to 40,000 affordable housing units under my administration in the last few years. The investment now is probably 400% over and above what we've done in the past. And we're doing precisely what you've just suggested. We have a project right now in the Burtonsville area, which we are looking at county land, and we're doing that in a number of other places, the old library in Silver Spring, as well as the new library in Silver Spring. We are taking properties which either we own or we can work with developers and turn them into projects primarily for affordable housing. So we're doing precisely that, and I'll go back and look at the area that you're talking about, and maybe there's some way we should come up with that one on the list as well.
Bruce, thank you for your call. Time for one more, Tom.
Mr. Leggett, while we're sitting here, I'm looking at the Dow the Dow, it's down 512 points. Huge drop. It's been a horrible beginning of the year for the. It seems that a lot of people are fearful we're going. We've had a tremendous economic boom in the Washington region. What do your experts tell you about what's happening in your county, in the region?
Well, we were doing pretty well up until just the end of the year, the beginning of this year, and it will impact us in a number of ways because capital gains go directly to what you see on Wall Street today. And this is why, when I go back to the liquor operation, why that is so important. Secondly, when you look at the county as a whole, one of the things which we have to do, which has been a cash cow for most of us, has been the federal government. We are trying to diversify and move away from that to ensure that we have other areas in which we can develop so that we can have a much more balanced and a diverse economy. The experts, I think, right now are still somewhat up in the air about the impact of this, and we'll wait to see how that development unfolds. I hope that there will be a turnaround, but most of this is tied to energy, as you know, the downturn in the energy market, and what is happening in China.
Yeah, oil under $30 a barrel.
Yeah.
Ike Leggett, he is the county executive for Montgomery County, Maryland. Ike Leggett, thank you so much for joining
us. Thank you, Coach. And
I'm going to stop calling you Washingtonian of the Year. You're a Montgomery Countyan of the Year.
That's right. Thank you.
That's Tom Sherwood. He's our resident analyst. He's a reporter for NBC4 and a columnist with the Current newspaper. Tom Sherwood, there is a new chair of the D.C. Police Union. His name is Matthew Mahl, M-A-H-L. I hope I'm pronouncing his last name correctly. He is a sergeant. But what I find interesting is that he got this position on the basis of saying it's time for a little more harmony between the police union and the leadership. To quote him, the current union leaders are always attacking the chief in the city. The police union and the city have the same goals. We want happy and safe police officers, and we want happy and safe communities. We can't keep punching the police leaders in the face all the time. That from the Washington Post.
Well, Delroy Burton, who lost the election, succeeded, his name just went out of my head.
Who was about to run for citywide office?
Chris Bauman.
Chris Bauman. Yes.
Chris Bauman was a very aggressive person when coming to speak against the policies of the police department. Delroy Burton was more mild mannered. But one thing that happened with the police union under Chris Bauman and Delroy Burton, they went 6 years without pay. This is what Mark Seagraves, who covers a lot of the police stuff, even more. Without an increase in pay. Without an increase in pay. 6 years. And a similar period of time happened with the fire department. The fire department got retroactive pay. The police officers didn't. That was a big blow to the members of the union and the rank and file officers. So there were a couple other issues. But Mahl is right. I mean, and I don't personally know him. I'm looking forward to having him come on our show even to talk about this. I think we'll have Chief Lanier coming up soon.
Yep.
The police department and its workforce can't be at loggerheads all the time. It just can't be. And I think maybe this is a step for the union saying we'll work better with the police department. Maybe the chief will figure out ways maybe to get more money for them. They just need to be working together.
Joining us in studio now is Robert White. He is a candidate for an at-large seat on the D.C. Council. He is a Democrat. Robert White, thank you so much for joining us.
Thanks so much for having me
back. If you have questions or comments for Robert White, you can call 800-433-8850 or send email to kojo@wamu.org. Take a look at him on our live video stream at kojoshow.org. This is not, as he said thanks you again because he has run before in 2014.
He's the only one wearing a tie if you have any confusion about who it is. When is the primary?
June 14th.
That's a long time. So you ran in 2014. You came in like fourth or fifth in the race that Alyssa Silverman won.
Yeah.
Correct.
What's different this time?
One, we won't have 15 people in the field.
You might have Mayor Gray in the field.
Well, I don't think that's most likely. But, when we ran in 2014, we ended up with 22,500 votes in a 15-person field. With a campaign run by entirely volunteers, even up to my campaign manager who had never worked on a campaign before. And so we gained a great deal of experience, but we brought on this time around a couple decades of experience. And so our team is stronger. And I think it's not by accident that you won't see as crowded a field. When I started thinking seriously about running, I met with a lot of folks I thought were likely to run and folks who ran against me in 2014. And ask them to come on board so that we don't have good candidates cutting each other out and leaving people stuck with the status quo.
Well, what do you offer? I mean, in that race, just to let people know, Anita Bonds got 85,000 votes to your 22, and Alyssa Silverman got 41,000
mm-hmm.
to your 22,000. What's the issue now? What, I mean, why you had several council members, I think, endorse you. Right? Was it Yvette Alexander, David Grosso?
David Grosso, Kenyon McDuffie.
Are they backing you this time? Yvette Scott may have a tough race.
This time you're running against the well-known incumbent, Vincent Orange, in the Democratic primary.
Yeah, that's right. But you'll note, really in terms of what's different in his race 4 years ago, he won with 24,000 votes. So I think our delta is not very big, and that was in a four-person race. So I think we're at pretty much a head-to-head, and that's my starting position. So.
Okay. All right, well, skip the civics class about you want to do better for jobs, housing, and all those things. Why should Vincent Orange lose? Why should he be replaced?
I think the time has come and gone. Voters have shown election after election in these past years that they're looking for new leadership on the council, and they're going to have an opportunity. And I think the incumbent has shown that he's dropping the ball where people need it. Just this morning, you see in the Washington Post for the second time this month, the Fed's saying that we may withhold tens of millions of dollars for job training programs because the city isn't spending the money. They're not doing proper oversight, and that falls under the jurisdiction of his committee. This is a time where people need jobs and job training more than ever.
What are the issues you feel, other issues that you feel are most important at this point?
Well, I think crime has really risen up to the top. People are not feeling safe in the city. I know when my wife leaves the house in the morning.
Where do you live? What part of the city?
I live in Brightwood Park. People know Petworth. We are the lesser-known northern neighbor of Petworth. But she takes the train and she jumps on the red line. And now that I'm not in the Attorney General's office anymore, she's there by herself. And every morning she leaves, I worry.
Attorney General had a big fundraiser for you the other night. The Attorney General,
yes,
and Ms. Schneider had a big fundraiser for you the other night. Who else is backing you that's well-known at this point?
Well, our chair, Matt Fruman, I think is a great guy, one of the best education advocates you could find. Caleb Pitts, who ran against me, who happened to be the only person who outraised me in my race, is now our treasurer. Brian Hart, who ran against me, is on our team. Pedro Rubio. A lot of really good folks from all across the city. We've really built an alliance of incredible leaders.
So who are you? What do you do for... You were working in the Attorney General's office. What were you doing before that when you were running in 2014? How do you earn money?
Right. I'm a lawyer. I graduated from American
Another
University
lawyer.
Law School.
You graduated from American University.
Yes. And spent most of my legal career working for Congresswoman Norton as her legislative counsel. So, I worked on the issues for many years that affect our city, from economic developments to voting rights. Policy really is my background.
Before you officially announced you were running, an exploratory committee began raising money as you considered a run, but it seems that ran afoul of Hatch rules around being a government employee running for office, because at that time you were still working in the Attorney General's office. You're a lawyer. How come you and your advisors weren't aware of that?
Well, I wasn't a member of the exploratory committee, but I don't think it ran afoul of Hatch Act rules. I think that Vega made a change in the rules, and the committee responded. So the committee,
being the Board of Ethics and Government Accountability.
Thank you very much. Thank you. Before the committee started, their counsel went to Vega and said, our understanding of the law is that this is fully permissible, and they asked for an opinion. And Vega gave an opinion that was in complete compliance with what the committee had found. And so they proceeded, and when Baker changed, the committee changed.
You just heard Tom Sherwood in his role as OAE, our official acronym explainer.
I try so hard not to do the acronyms.
I think it should be a law against using them, but some of the titles are too long. You talked about crime being a big issue. You think Chief Lanier's time is up?
I think that every option is on the table, frankly.
What does that mean?
Are
you for her right now, or are you against her?
I'm for people feeling safe. And right now what I'm seeing in the community...
So you would replace her?
Well, I think that is an option. It has to be a viable option.
Well, she's been there. This is her ninth year, I think.
Yeah. Well, we have to see response. What we're not seeing is a connection between the beat officers, the blue shirts, and the white shirts. If you go to a community meeting, what you hear will depend on who's there.
Overall crime is largely static or down, except for homicides horribly up this past year. What, 162 homicides compared to, I think, 20 or something the year before.
Right. But I think the bigger
issue.
Is it
the chief?
Well, what I think the chief may be missing is that it's not about the statistics. It's about how people feel.
And she says that very clearly.
Feel safe.
Right. And, yeah, she says that. But is that a reason to replace her?
You know, if you run a poll, you'd find that she's probably still one of the most popular public officials in the District of Columbia. Saying that you might replace her may, in the view of some people, disqualify
you. Well, I think that's how you know that I'm not going to put my finger to the wind. I'm really going to stand up and be a leader on the council.
Well, that's why I'm asking you right now, because, you know, I think part of the problem is people want to do well, and you have a very good reputation. I don't want to suggest you don't. In fact, you do.
Well, thank you.
But in terms of making decisions, like the council right now is considering whether to have 16 weeks of paid family leave in this city. There's the CFO says that will cost far more than what the supporters say it will cost. The business community says even more. The advocates say, oh, it's a lot less. It's a major social change. Do you have a position on 16 weeks of paid family leave?
Yeah, absolutely. I don't think that anybody should worry about losing their home or their well-being because they get sick or they have a baby. But I think that, one, we have to see where the numbers come out. As you pointed out, they were all over the place in the...
So where's your basic view, though?
My basic view is that this is a human rights issue, and it's something that we have to do. We have to have paid leave, but we have to do the work of seeing what the market can support and what it can support.
So you're in favor of paid leave, but how many weeks is subject to negotiation?
Well, not a negotiation. It's subject to the facts. Can we pay for it?
Well, that's what council members do. They negotiate all the time. You negotiate with other council members so you can get 7 votes to pass something. So I think Alyssa Silverman is very firm. She wants 16 weeks.
Right. But if 16 weeks is not something that we can afford and we don't know based on the hearing yesterday, then that may not be realistic. And so I think we don't just say, well, if we can't do 16 weeks, then we don't do anything. We say, what can we do?
I ask that kind of hard question about, are you for the chief? Are you for 16 weeks? Are you for this or that? Because we, on the politics side, we got a lot of what I call ninth grade civics class about do well, work together, be respectful, get the facts, all that stuff. When in the trenches of being an elected official, you have to get 6 people to agree with you, and you have to have a clear idea of where you are and where you're going. It's that old line about falling for something.
That's right. But you have to make good decisions on those issues.
Do you have any position papers out yet on taxes and anything like that? Is that all to come?
It's all to come. Last time I ran, we ran a campaign that was largely surrounded policy. And one of the things that we learned is that people want to know more about the basis for your decisions and less about the black and white policy. And so while I am a policy guy, and you will see plenty of that, I'm going to be talking more to people about where I come from, why I'm doing this.
Politics is a contact sport.
I was going to ask you about what you were recently doing in the Attorney General's office, but let me have Sheila in Washington, D.C. ask that. Sheila, you're on the air. Go ahead, please.
Good afternoon, gentlemen. Thank you all for having me. Mr. White, I see that from your bio that you used to work for Mr. Racine. Can you tell me a little bit about what you did and why that experience will benefit me as a resident?
Yes.
That was my exact question, Sheila. You must be watching the live video stream, aren't you?
Sharp resident.
Go ahead, please.
So when Carl Racine was elected as our first elected attorney general, one of the things that he wanted to make sure he did was to stand up a public-facing office for the first time. And so he asked me to come on board and lead up the community outreach portion of the office that was new. So I worked to develop the blueprint for how the office would relate to people, how it would use its resources to benefit people, like consumer protection. We, for the first time, went out, taught seniors how to protect themselves from common frauds. We were in schools talking to kids about juvenile justice and making sure that their first contact with the juvenile justice system was a positive one.
How would that inform your agenda as a council member, what you were doing in the Attorney General's office?
Well, it reinforced what I saw in more to kids than anything. I saw kids that came from some of the worst circumstances, but when we came to them with a positive message and with an extended arm, they extended arms right back to us, even though I think to a lot of people, they may fit a shallow profile of kids who people think may not make it, and it reinforced my commitment to these
kids. Sheila, thank you very much for your call. One more. Here's Melvin in Ward 5. Melvin, your turn.
Yes, good evening. Quick question to your guests. If you're elected, what would be your position would you continue to support Kai Henderson, even though she's been there a long time? And secondly, what is your position on smoking marijuana in private clubs? Are you for that or against that?
Direct questions.
I appreciate it.
Thank you.
I think that
Kaya Henderson.
Kaya Henderson is doing a good job. I would not support moving her away right now.
She has publicly said 2017 is the end of her term. She's publicly said she's going to leave, which
said that on this broadcast.
Yeah, yes, correct. And which means the mayor has to, and the 2017 budget will be this fall, so you start preparing it. So she might be, you know, you have to have a new person maybe by this fall or early next year.
Right.
Marijuana, private clubs.
Marijuana and private clubs, I don't think we're there yet in the district.
What do you think, personally? You for it, if you can work out the details, or are you against it?
I am not for it right now. I just haven't seen the science to support that that it wouldn't be a health issue.
So you'd be for it if somebody told you it would be all right?
I would certainly look at the evidence.
Do you smoke marijuana or have you? It's legal now.
I have.
I used to say I didn't care if you asked me. I just didn't want you to ask me when was the last time. Okay.
On now to Sarah in Washington, D.C. Sarah, you're on the air. Go ahead, please.
Thanks, Kojo. Mr. White, I have a question for you regarding education. So the Washington Post recently had an article come out that said that the percentage of high school students who graduated from D.C. public schools in 4 years increased by 6 points for the class of 2015. So it's looking that they've reached 64% graduation rate. So I would love to hear where you stand on education, and if you were elected to the council, you know, what would be some of the things you'd do for DC public schools?
And please try to be as specific as possible, because we know you are for education.
I want someone to come on the program and say I'm against it.
You know, ignorance
is bliss.
That person will not be running for office.
No, they won't, at least not for long. Look, we really have to start to put the kids first. I think we've seen actually politics really get in the way of good decisions over the years. So what works for the kids, I'm going to support, whether it's more autonomy for schools, whether it's wraparound services to support the good efforts that principals and teachers are making. Whatever is going to give a better outcome for kids is something I'm going to support. And to the statistics, I think a lot of us do recognize that we are having wealthier families move into the city, and I'm grateful that they are sending their kids to public schools. Well, that is pushing up our success numbers, but I want to see that the kids in Ward 7 and 8 are getting that fair shot, that they have a school that's going to prepare
the school
them
for
as well
young
as
men.
Paul and Wilson.
You support the school for young men, I presume.
I do.
Okay. Here's another specific question from another Sarah, this time on Ward 6, Capitol Hill. Sarah, you're on the air. Go ahead, please.
Thank you so much for taking my question today. So I guess this is back to the politics of this.
That's why we're here.
Yes. So I've noticed that Councilman Orange has been trying to align himself with Mayor Bowser and the Green Team, and I don't really like that. And I was wondering, Mr. White, if you were elected, who would you be accountable to? Who would you align yourself with on the council?
That's a big issue in D.C. right now. You know, what people in D.C. want on the council is an independent voice, and I will be fully 100% an independent voice aligned with the people. I think people want somebody that's going to start to bridge the gaps that we have in this city. That's something that I can do that nobody else in this race can do.
I infer from what the caller is saying that if Mr. Orange is aligning himself with the Green Team and you are running against Mr. Orange, that you are basically running against Muriel Bowser and the Green Team.
I don't think that's right. I think I've seen the incumbent turn himself green, but I don't
know. No. The mayor of Bowser has said she's supporting Vincent Orange. She has said she's supporting Vincent Orange.
He's done
everything but surgically attach himself to Mayor Bowser.
Right.
She's had him at public at a community event.
Oh, I've seen it. I've been there.
Press conference.
Well, you know, look, I don't think he fits the mantra of a fresh start.
All right, that's a good quote. What about the Redskins, the Washington Redskins? Do you say the name or you don't say the name?
I don't say the name.
Don't say the name. Would we like the team to come to town if it's economically viable when they change the name?
You know, I'd love to see, as a huge fan, I would love to see the team playing in the city. I'm just not sure that I see the space where it would make the most sense when we have bigger problems, housing issues. We're
not
really
going to build housing on the side of RFK. That's reserved for
sports. That's right.
Sports.
I know it. I did the economic development on the Hill for many years. But it will require money. And we saw that with the soccer stadium. We saw that with the baseball stadium. So the resources
land
are both
perhaps,
land
yeah.
and
would
money.
Where would the football team fit anywhere just as a possibility other than where the stadium is now? Where would it possibly go.
I'm sure the region would happily find places.
No, I'm talking about in the city.
In the city.
Oh. If you want the team in the city, where would it go other than where it used to be?
In the Hill East area, roughly. I don't know that there's another place it could really realistically fit. And there's been some analysis of, you know, parking. What would you do with parking?
Well, people would make them come on the metro.
Let me get to the issue that's been animating Tom all day today. We got an email from Myron who says, duped by Walmart. As a resident of the Capitol View neighborhood east of the river, I'm disappointed but not surprised. I warned all that would listen not to trust the world's largest retailer to do anything that they don't want to do. The D.C. leadership failed to protect the interest of the residents and allowed the neediest neighborhoods to be used to provide Walmart access to D.C. What is your thinking about? I'm sure you've heard the announcement.
I think it was summed up greatly. That was a bait and switch. And part of the premise for Walmart coming to D.C. and getting some support was that people felt like one of the places it was going to go was Skyland. I used to live walking distance from Skyland, and people over there need more grocery options. They need more options. And Walmart said they were coming, and now they're saying that they're not, and that's just too convenient.
Should the city look into the legal arrangements and find any way possible to make Walmart pay for this? I mean, they are opening four stores. I mean, I think four stores, at least three are open, and they're hiring people. They're doing business. But a lot of us, including me, never expected them to build in Skyland. They just never gave the slightest emotional hint that they would go there.
I think we saw a lot of hints that they were going to try to get out of it.
And indeed, that's what they have done. We are almost out of time. Tom Sherwood, Robert White, Dan Snyder, the owner of the team, won't apparently return Mayor Bowser's telephone calls. What do you think is going on?
It's okay. I don't think, you know, and there's a long story in the Post today I recommended to people about how he has grown in the job, although he's already a grown man, so I'm not sure why he has to grow anymore. But the fact is, he doesn't like the fact that the mayor would occasionally would say Redskins and not say it. Her policy is she wants him to change the name. She wants him to move into town. That's the economic opportunity. Whether you say the name or not, whether it's changed or not, that's the economic opportunity.
And you, Robert White, would like the team to come back to town also?
I would love for them to come back to town. I just don't think that we have the space for it right now.
So would you want them to change the name?
Wait a minute, that's
They would have to change the name.
You want them to come back to town, but there's no space for them. It means they can't come back to town.
Robert White, he's a candidate for the at-large D.C. council seat. Thank you so much for joining us.
Good luck to you. Thank you.
Tom Sherwood, he's our resident analyst. He's a reporter for NBC4 and a columnist with the current newspapers. Thank you so much for joining us. Good luck to you.
How's that looking, this Walmart thing?
Thank you all for listening. I'm Kojo Nnamdi. Coming up Monday on the Kojo Nnamdi Show.
Thanks for listening to the Kojo Nnamdi Show. And if you're already a member of WAMU 88.5, thank you for your support. If not, it's easy to give online at wamu.org. Just click the donate button, and thanks.